the hardest thing about pets that arrest out of hospital, that have a stop of their heart rate out of a clinic, is the time involved. That window of time that exists where they aren't getting an IV catheter or life-saving drugs or multiple people working on them at once, that time is such a huge factor in a recovery.
Welcome to the Positive Pet Podcast. This podcast is where pet heroes and expert advice come to life. I'm Aaron Nauta, your host, a passionate animal activist, first aid trainer, and safety coach. This podcast was created for pet owners like you, where each week we'll share heartwarming stories and essential tips to keep your pets happy, healthy, and safe. Let's embark on this positive adventure together. Today we are joined by Dr. Paul Cunningham, co-founder and chief veterinarian of Ready Vet Go. With a passion for emergency and critical care, Dr. Paul brings years of experience from both the US and Australia, specializing in life-saving treatments like CPR and handling cardiac emergencies in pets. In this episode, we'll dive to this critical topic like heart attacks, cardiac arrest, and CPR, what every pet owner needs to know to act quickly in an emergency. Tune in for essential advice that could save your pet's life. Let's get started.
I'm originally from the US. I grew up in Oklahoma. I'm in a more rural area around lots of farms, had dogs and cats, had grandparents with cows and the like. And so I never thought that my veterinary career would turn into me being now a veterinary paramedic. Didn't ever think that I would be working in emergency hospitals and things of that sort. So I went to school there, moved to the Michigan area, did several years of both teaching in an academic institution, as well as working in like a referral hospital setting for pets for specialty and emergency. And it would have been around the sort of just pre-COVID era. I was interested in moving to Australia after having spent some time overseas in Australia during my clinical year of vet school. Fast forward to me now living in Australia, this being my sort of permanent home, having been here for a few years and have now set up Ready Vet Go with my partner, Nick, who is a human nurse. So Ready Vet Go was born primarily out of a need. I was working in emergency vet hospitals where we'd see a lot of pets arriving to the clinic, having not had the support that they could have had to ensure that they'd have a better outcome. We've advanced so many specialties in the vet world, things like cardiology, dermatology, oncology, et cetera. And we've just really left the ambulance aspect or the paramedicine aspect behind. There's not been anybody that's done it, I think, as effectively as we have at Ready Vet Go. Yeah. And we look forward to now year in branching this service out, expanding the service beyond just the Melbourne area. And we provide a lot of at-home urgent care. We go do home visits. We provide ambulance transport for pets. We're really the only vet on board paramedic vet ambulance service in all of Australia that operates with a vet at all times. We're really proud of the work that we do.
Yeah, I think that's really fascinating, amazing that you guys have started this up. I've been following it since kind of the beginning. And yeah, it's just really cool to see this come into reality. And then do you think it's something that will grow as well throughout Australia?
Yeah, we do. We at the moment are in the midst of we have a second ambulance here in Melbourne. We don't quite have the team and caseload to support it yet, but the goal would be that we soon have two vans on the road for our days of service, that we can split up service areas, provide, I think, even more rapid care than we already do. And we've also been in talks with potential, I'd say, interested parties on the Eastern Seaboard. So we'd really love to see some hospital groups on maybe in the area of, say, Sydney, Brisbane, Gold Coast, take this on board. I think it's just about finding some veterinarians and nurses that are passionate about what we're doing, finding the right hospitals to support what we do, because we entirely rely on hospitals knowing who we are and then utilizing our service and reaching out to us for help. So I do foresee that there'll be growth. I'd really love to see it nationwide and have a Ready Vet Go branch in every state.
Yeah, really exciting. Yeah, I look forward to seeing how that all branches off, but we'll definitely put some links for your guys' services in the notes.
Excellent.
We wanted to bring you on to give your expertise on kind of heart conditions, cardiac arrest, and heart attacks and kind of the differences and all that. Just start off maybe by letting us know, what are some common kind of signs that that pets might have a heart condition, and what should pet owners be aware of?
Sure. Yeah, I think Some of the most common things that you hear owners complain of with their pet's health leading up to, say, a heart failure episode or cardiac arrest is things like a really big one. It's something that you can actually measure at home would be watching their resting respiratory rate. So if you have a pet who maybe has had some exercise intolerance, they're not playing as hard as they used to, or they're not having as much endurance during their walks. If you start to see that potentially their resting breathing effort after those walks or after those plays is really heavy, the rule of thumb is that if they have 35 breaths per minute or higher for a consistent period of time, and you're seeing that trend go up and up, there could very well be a cardiopulmonary issue, some sort of heart or lung related problem. And that would be an escalation point where we'd say, hey, this just isn't right. I'm really concerned about my dog or cat. Maybe it's time to get them into the vet for x-rays. So exercise intolerance, a higher resting breathing rate, things like coughing, episodes where they might have extended breathing with their neck, they're extending their head out to catch a breath. Those are probably the biggest ones that we hear as complaints.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then, so what is the main difference? So if you can explain maybe for people who don't know, because there is a massive difference between heart attack and cardiac arrest. What are those big differences?
Yeah, you hear of people saying things like they describe that their pet had a heart attack, and that could be they've maybe had a fainting episode, or they might have had an episode where they did go into heart failure, or they were breathing with a lot of effort. Those heart attack episodes or collapses are quite different from a full arrest, whereas pet might have a change in the way that their heart is pumping. They're not moving blood through their body as effectively, and then their brain and organs aren't getting oxygen as well as they should, right? Mm-hmm. So that lack of oxygen leads to a faint or a loss of consciousness. That's different because the heart's still pumping, even though that pet might have lost consciousness. And then they often will come to, they might have a brief episode of being dull or fainting and then getting right back up on their feet. Whereas a cardiac arrest is a complete stop of that heart rhythm. That could be from an arrhythmia. It could be from a pet who has an underlying fibrillation, a tremoring of their heart, an abnormal rhythm that then leads to just a complete interruption of that rhythm and a stop of that heartbeat. Those are very different things. They mean very different health outcomes as well. And yeah, I think it would be interesting to talk about that today. People don't use the term heart attack in the vet industry, namely because the heart attack in people is very different to what pets experience.
Okay,
Yeah. So pets don't get the same heart disease that humans do. They don't get blocked arteries with plaque the way that a human person would get a blocked artery. A heart attack would be more a change in their, potentially their blood flow or their oxygenation or their level of consciousness versus a cardiac arrest is that just complete stop of that heart rhythm. Yeah. And yeah, a complete failure of the machine in a way.
Yeah. So for people who have done first aid as a human first aid or something like that, you could relate the cardiac arrest is actually very similar to a human. However, the heart attack is more on the more fainting and blood flow and all of that kind of stuff. So there is a difference for dogs and cats and all that.
Yeah, exactly. And it goes into, you see it in TV, you see it in the media of human paramedic shows, or you think of Grey's Anatomy, right? If somebody coming in with a heart attack, they get defibrillated. There's lots of shocking and things that happen. It's not as common in pets, namely because heart disease just manifests in a much different way. Humans have a different diet than dogs. We have different coronary artery disease than pets, dogs and cats. And yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah. And so that's interesting. So they don't get the plaque and all that along their arteries like humans do. And even if the food and diet, does that not affect any of that?
Yeah. So yeah, pets, dogs and cats aren't known to get atherosclerosis or that plaque buildup in their arteries. So they don't undergo a bypass surgery, you know, to have those vessels bypassed or managed. It's more common for them to have either genetically related heart conditions. So dogs and cats can have either genetics that might predispose them to their heart becoming more fragile with time or having dilation of their heart or thickening of the heart muscle that makes the valves and the chambers not function the way that they should anymore. There is some report of some grain-free associated heart disease. There's still a lot of evidence that needs to be, I think, made concrete around that, but you will hear that talked about in the vet space or in the pet food space about the risks of eating a grain-free food and the potential that there's a heart-related issue. the big thing that we know is whether it's grain free or not, basically, if a food lacks certain amino acids, particularly an amino acid called taurine, taurine deficient dogs and cats can develop significant heart disease. And we found that when we supplement that or correct that, some of that heart disease can be reversed. So there's a direct correlation there.
So what are the most common causes of cardiac arrest in dogs and cats?
There's lots, of course, other things that can lead to a cardiac arrest. A dog or cat who's choked, if they have choked on a toy or accidentally strangled themselves on a collar or a leash, they can have a cardiac arrest from that lack of oxygen.
Yeah.
And then you talk about cardiac arrests that happen primarily from heart disease. So the biggest one we'd see, especially with dogs, would be congestive heart failure. So a lot of dogs will develop a degeneration of the valve in their heart. The valve doesn't make blood flow as normally and smoothly as it used to. The heart reacts to that over time by dilating or having the chambers change in size. And over time, that heart's trying to compensate and change to do its job, but eventually it fails and that mechanism fails. And eventually those dogs just don't get the blood supply, the oxygen that they need, and they can go into an arrest.
Yeah, no, we had that exact, we just recently lost one of our dogs and it was heart failure. And it was the valve. And then it was about a year long process that it ended up going through, because then they started getting water in the lungs because their heart wasn't able to pump as well as it was.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it can be a long drawn out thing sometimes, which is never easy for people to see. But
yeah. I think the other really common one that we see, if we talk about cats in particular can have a lot more hidden heart disease. We can see cats that will never have any hint of being unwell, or you may not, as a veterinarian, find on examination anything audibly wrong. You don't hear abnormal murmurs or rhythms. Cats are a bit more prone to developing heart disease. It can be a bit silent in a way. There are ways to screen for that, but cats are in particular at risk for getting what we called FATE, or F-A-T-E. So that means feline aortic thromboembolism, or basically getting a blood clot that can silently be forming in their heart and can suddenly dislodge, create a blockage of their aorta or their vessels. And that can be a sudden painful thing where they can't walk, they're paralyzed in their back legs, they can go into sort of a sudden episode of heart failure, and it can be really quite quick and fatal very rapidly. That's a really awful one to have witnessed, and one that can be a sudden onset of heart failure, heart and arrest episode. It's all sort of grim stuff to talk about, but I'm sorry that it's a bit of a dark conversation in a way. We talk about cardiac arrest, talking about pet suddenly passing, but I think it's good information to have. So when you go in and have those chats with your vet, you have an understanding of, what are they talking about when they say there's a heart murmur, or that they've done a blood test and some of the cardiac enzymes or things look a bit abnormal, or their thyroid levels are abnormal. All those things connect and they can prevent a pet from getting into this situation.
Let's say somebody's pet has experienced a heart attack, they fainted. What is, I guess, the most immediate response owners should take?
Yeah, absolutely. I would give you the advice, and I'd give pet owners the advice that we would give vet nurses and vets in clinics when we're doing CPR training. If a pet has lost consciousness and you're not seeing them responding in any way, the first thing we say is to act. The best thing that we can do is start to provide chest compressions and basically do the pump mechanism, provide that pumping effort that the heart otherwise would have been providing when they were conscious and still had a heartbeat. There are some different resources that are out there. There's one in particular called the Recover Initiative. It basically is a group of vets and human doctors who have looked over all the evidence and said, here's the best thing we can do in a situation where a dog or cat has stopped breathing and their heart has stopped. And we know that chest compressions are the most important thing. Typically, that means giving 2 compressions per second or 120 compressions a minute. If you had a stopwatch on, you just give 2 chest compressions every second if you're monitoring that.
Interesting. That's actually now moved into the same as humans then.
I admittedly haven't done any sort of first aid refreshers in many years, but I understand, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Aaron, that chest compressions are now considered the most important thing to do.
Yeah, definitely for humans, if they're unconscious and they're not breathing, then that's what we would definitely do. But before, it wasn't the same for animals. So that's interesting that it's actually now come in line with humans. And I'm interested to see that recovery initiative.
Yeah. We know that when, even in a vet hospital, if we've got multiple multiple people who are doing CPR and they're attending to that pet. You have somebody who's assigned doing compressions. You might have somebody who's then obtaining an airway, putting in a breathing tube, starting to breathe through that pet. There are some recommendations out there. Say if you're a person at home with a pet who collapses, that you can do 30 compressions followed by 2 breaths. I think there is probably not a best answer in that situation, but my advice would be, say that you're at home with a friend or family, have somebody continue to do compressions consistently while you have somebody who might be calling up the vet or even calling a service like ReadyVetGo to ask for advice or to ask for somebody to attend at home. The hardest thing about pets that arrest out of hospital, that have a stop of their heart rate out of a clinic, is the time involved. That window of time that exists where they aren't getting an IV catheter or life-saving drugs or multiple people working on them at once, that time is such a huge factor in a recovery.
Mm-hmm. So getting the sooner that you get somebody there, the better.
Yeah.
Having a vet ambulance that can attend soon would be ideal.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
So having more access in the future would be amazing. So can you just walk us through the basic steps for CPR for pets? Just, you mentioned it's 30 compressions, two breaths, but maybe like how do you find the correct place on a human? It's going to be a lot different than on an animal. So you can't really just use that type of landmarking. So how would you landmark on them? How do you do breaths, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. It's a really good question. On dogs and cats, the majority of them, whereas a person who is undergoing CPR might be on their back, dogs and cats tend to be laying on their side, unless you're a really barrel-chested, like a bulldog or a very round, rotund sort of dog. Most of the time, it's safest just to have a pet laying on either side. It doesn't matter which. Putting your hands just behind their elbow, so right over their heart silhouette, right where you'd be pushing directly over their heart muscle. That's the best hand placement in a smaller dog. If for some reason, say you've got quite a large dog who maybe is a golden retriever, a lab, a Rottweiler, shepherd, etc., it's actually more effective to just do compressions over the widest part of their chest. I imagine their chest being like a set of billows. If you were trying to blow air into a fireplace, a sort of old school billows where you'd pump, if you're using your hands to pump over the widest part of their rib cage, you're utilizing that billow that is their chest cavity to push blood through, compress their vessels and their heart, and provide the most effective compressions. So the rate that you'll do it is still going to be the same. And I think if we talk about the steps with basic life support at home, let's just imagine for simplicity that you've got two people. Maybe it's you and a partner, you and a friend. One person is going to jump immediately onto doing chest compressions. Small dogs and cats over just behind their elbow, just over their heart. Bigger dogs would be over the widest part of their chest. And you're going to do 2 compressions per second, so 120 compressions per minute. And then the other person, the second helper, the second responder, if you're at home, would probably be essentially putting your mouth over their snout, trying to cover their muzzle and keep air tight and deliver a breath in through their nose and mouth. It sounds a bit, full on, involved and a bit invasive, but that's really at home, out of a hospital, the best way to deliver a breath. When it comes to giving breaths, you're going to want to give 10 breaths per minute or count 6 seconds and give 1 breath every 6 seconds.
Mm-hmm. So if they're at home, they're doing those 30 compressions. And then if you're by yourself, you'd be doing the breaths and the compressions. But if you're with somebody else, you'd be trying to get somebody else to help while they're on the phone and stuff like that.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think in this situation, it's good with technology where ReadyVetGo has responded to situations like this where we've had two people who were at home with their dog or even at a park, at a dog park. They've maybe had bystanders, maybe they haven't, but even just dialing the local, the closest 24-hour vet or dialing ReadyVetGo, having them on speaker while you're attending, that's often the situation. Just so you've got a line of access, you can speak to them while you're doing your job at the same time. When in doubt, if you're not sure what to do, dial up the vet that you know and ask for a bit of guidance and they can talk you through it. I think any vet would be happy to provide that advice.
Yeah, definitely. Great. Thank you for that. And so that would continue until hopefully either you guys arrive or the vet tell you what to do. And so how can pet owners practice or prepare for an emergency situation, especially when it comes to cardiac events? Would it be worth it to have a practice on a stuffed animal or something like that? Or what would you say?
Yeah, I think that's not a bad idea. We know how important it is in the vet space for hospitals to repeat training. There's this muscle memory that goes into doing these sort of things. And especially for a day practice or a person at home, they're not doing CPR commonly. But if you've done that practice, you've committed it to memory, doing compressions on a stuffed animal is a great idea. Or even attending first aid classes or even pet CPR courses that exist. I think they're really helpful tools. Tools like the one that you've created, Aaron, I think are a really good idea. If for any reason you have a dog who might be at risk for an episode like this, where they might be at risk for heart failure or an arrest or cardiac arrest, having your first aid kit is helpful. And if nothing else, it's going to be, even if you never use them, at least they're there on standby.
Is there anything that you've said what we do, but what would be something that we wouldn't want to do during when attempting CPR, or would there be a situation where you wouldn't want to?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think inevitably, if you're doing the basics of really good effective compressions, and admittedly, if you're doing good compressions, you're going to be really compressing their chest down. I hate to be a bit graphic to say it, you might feel pops or cracks or things that happen. And that's unfortunately part of good CPR in a way.
And that would be their ribs possibly breaking.
That is a risk. They've identified that it's a pretty low risk. If that were to happen for you to continue, we'd still say if you felt strange feelings, strange pops, cracks, keep doing what you're doing. The chest compressions are the most important thing. So do continue. That would be my do advice. My don't advice would be to step away to do other things. The longer we can do consistent chest compressions, the better. We know that it takes about 60 seconds of really effective compressions to build up that momentum in the circulation. There are human studies that have shown that. So my advice is don't interrupt those compressions as much as you possibly can. The other thing that I think is a do is, especially if it's a dog or a cat who doesn't have an underlying health history, they've suddenly collapsed, it is worth safely doing this, but checking their mouth, checking their airway, making sure that they haven't accidentally choked on a toy, a ball, a piece of food. I hate to say how many situations where we've had pet owners call or bring their pet in who had arrested and there had been a foreign object stuck in their throat or at the top of their airway, at the back of their tongue. So it's worth having a peek, even briefly, to make sure that airway is open and clear, to deliver breaths and to continue compressions.
And so I guess, so with CPR, so just how would you be opening their airway just to make sure that is open the whole time? And then also, how deep would you be doing on the compressions? Because it's 1/3 on a human. Would it be the same on the pets?
Yeah. So to answer the first part, you don't necessarily have to open the throat or maybe extend the neck in the way that we might need to position a person when they're on their back during CPR. With pets, if you're going to briefly check and make sure that they hadn't choked on something obvious, you can pull the top of their muzzle, maybe put the hand over the top of their nose, the bridge of their nose, grab sort of their cheekbones, and then use a finger with another hand, just lower their chin, open their jaw, and then deeply look. You can, especially if they're unconscious, you can pull the tongue forward. You can use your finger to swab the back of the throat. We'd always caution putting your hand in the mouth of a pet who is moving. That means if they're moving their jaw, they're swallowing, they have a gag reflex, they're not fully unconscious, they probably haven't fully arrested. They might be in an episode of, say, a heart attack or in heart failure or in another situation. Mm-hmm. But if they're completely immobile and you're not seeing any movement or swallowing, it would be safe to have a look, pull the tongue forward, have a look in the back of the throat, and even gently swab with your finger to move anything that could be there. And I say that especially because you see these videos online now of people who have had a dog choke on a ball or choke on a piece of food. They've inhaled a sausage from the table and they've choked on it. Pulling that out of the way could be like the instant fix and a big win.
Perfect. Thank you. So are there any breeds, I guess, that or age groups that are more prone to heart conditions in pets?
Yeah, there are a number of breeds that if you ask any vet, they might think about and say, yeah, that's a dog or even a cat who's at risk for heart failure or underlying heart disease. When we talk about dogs, it could be a number of different size breeds. And I think one of the sort of poster childs for congestive heart failure or valve disease in dogs would be the Cavalier King Charles. So as a breed, they're they're overrepresented in terms of developing left-sided heart failure, where their valves degenerate over time. They typically are dogs or cats who have heart failure. They're typically geriatric, so over the age of 7 or 8. Other dog breeds that we think about could be at high risk would be Dobermans. There are some genetic tests that exist in certain breeds where you can look for risk factors for certain heart conditions. And Dobermans in particular are at risk for what we call DCM, or dilated cardiomyopathy, which is one that is, again, typically genetically related. It's not typically preventable or reversible. And it's one that happens later in life, over the age of 4, 5, 6, 7, that these dogs develop that issue. There are other dogs who might not have a structural change in their heart, but they might actually have arrhythmias that just pop up out of nowhere. And boxers in particular are one that can develop boxer cardiomyopathy, where they get an abnormal rhythm. And then, to mention a few cat breeds, there are Sphinx cats that are known for getting what we call HCM, or hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. That's a thickening of the heart muscle. And our advice would be, if you have a dog or cat breed that is particularly known for heart issues, having regular vet visits, having a vet listen to the heart, or even do things like chest x-rays or blood testing to screen them for underlying problems. The best advice is that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, really. If we can catch it early, we're going to make sure that they live a long, happy life.
Definitely. So I guess moving past it, so that what are some steps owners might take if they had to actually get them to the vet? Is there something that, and they maybe they had to continue CPR or something like that, would be something, what would you be your advice on transporting if they had to, if you guys were there in another state, because there is listeners across Australia?
Yeah.
So what would they do?
Yeah. Look, and we'd say the same thing we would say to people who might even call ReadyVetGo for advice. So if you were to ring us, we would say our advice is always to get your pet into the closest vet where they can get oxygen and get the support that they need. Sometimes we are the closest resource for people who either can't move their pet out of their home, or they might be in a regional area or a distant place inaccessible to a 24-hour vet. But my advice is, especially pets that might have had a fainting event or syncope where they've just become unconscious and then popped back up, is get them right in somewhere to a vet clinic where they can get oxygen, they can have their vitals checked, we can check their pulse ox, check their oxygenation, their blood pressure, and make sure that we are in a place where we can act if another faint episode happens or another collapse event occurs.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned, ReadyVetGo is a service where we can respond fairly quickly, depending on where we're at that particular time, and often can help people who might be homebound, who have a disability or an age-related issue where they can't move their big dog or cat or any size pet, really. And so the biggest thing that we bring along is the basics of oxygen, advanced life support drugs, monitoring, and then skilled team that can do the basics of life support.
And then I guess, post episode, they've had this happen. Is there something that maybe that they would need to look at if you had to do CPR on your pet? What's something post-op that we'd have to look for?
Yeah. And I guess to ask a question on that question, Aaron, is that just in terms of like after their pet's stable again, or?
Yeah. I guess if you've taken them whole, what are some things like, is there going to be long-term? I guess if it's a heart condition, that could be a long-term thing, but.
Yeah,
absolutely. I guess doing CPR on your pet, what are some of the effects that they might experience now from having to do that?
Yeah, you can imagine that it'd be quite a stressful event, not only for that owner, that pet parent, but for the pet as well. They're probably quite disoriented in that moment of losing consciousness and coming to and recognizing that there's probably an emotional or a behavioral part of this whole thing that we have to take into account, or a pet might be maybe more on edge or have a bit more stress, and just acknowledging that or managing that medically in a certain way. Particularly, we know that after CPR, there are certainly effects that it has on the body. So you can have, as we mentioned, things that pop, crackle, and you might have pain from rib injuries or muscle injuries to the chest. You can have bruising of the lungs that can create discomfort or a bit of maybe tightness of the breath. Those are things that definitely a vet would advise you on managing once they've recovered. And we'd certainly say that any pet that goes in after an arrest is going to be really closely monitored and then send home once we feel really comfortable that they're going to be okay. But yeah, at the end of the day, as well, as an owner, it can be a really traumatic thing to witness. And so it's important to take care of yourself, take care of the grief that you might have gone through if that pet didn't make it through that CPR, or manage the anxiety around what happens if this happens again, and just making a plan. I think the only thing we can do is try and find power and control in those situations where we can, and give that owner and pet the best outcome.
Be as prepared as possible and having all our resources ready to go. So having numbers and phone numbers and all that kind of stuff ready to go before anything happens,
I think absolutely
is a really good thing to do. I just wanted to ask, Paul, do you have any pets yourself?
I do. Yeah, I have two cats, a tripod named Lily, who's a three-legged little calico cat. And I've also got a newly adopted cat named Stewie, who is a terror. He's just a maniac, an absolute maniac. Both, thankfully, quite healthy pets. Really, really just bring a lot of joy into my life.
And so I like to ask at the end, what if your pets had any superpower, what would you want your pets to have? And what?
I think I would want Lily to be able to levitate, because right now I think she's a bit jealous that she can't climb the same cat trees and shelves that Stewie can, the other young boy cat. And I wish that Stewie was made of lead so he would stay on the ground, because he just climbs everything in sight. Trees, fences, houseplants, televisions, people. Yeah. That's how I feel.
Great. Thank you so much, Paul, for coming on the show today. Really appreciate it. I think that the listeners are going to get so much out of this, and
great.
Really appreciate it. So thank you.
Yeah, no worries, Aaron. I'm really happy to help. Happy to chat. I know it can probably be a bit of like dense information at times, but I think it's really important stuff to talk about. People are a lot more aware of these issues in pets. There's a lot of vets and human doctors as well that are putting effort into making sure we're doing the right and doing the best thing for these guys.
Thank you.
And for those of you listening from home, please don't forget to like, subscribe, and share with a friend. See you next week.